It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
When you're arrested, I mean, really the best thing to do, typically they say you have the right to remain silent. So if you have a right, then you probably ought to exercise it. The bottom line is, when they start reading you your rights... then there's a threat should probably clue you in that they think you've done a very bad thing. And the chances of you being able to say anything that is going to help you are not good. So the best thing for you to do is to be quiet. It's just like what your grandma probably told you a long time ago. It's better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt.
Criminal defense attorney, former prosecutor, former Richmond City Council member, former vice mayor of Richmond, and current member of the House of Delegates, Manoli Lupasi, discusses your rights during a police stop and arrest. And during this week's News You Can Use, we discuss housing discrimination against the deaf and hard of hearing and against people with speech impediments. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 178, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. More than 9 million people in the U.S. identify as deaf or hard of hearing, and about 2.1 million people identify as having a speech impediment. Many rely on a telecommunications relay service, or TRS, to communicate by telephone. Both the Fair Housing Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibit discrimination against TRS users with disabilities in housing-related transactions. Despite these legal protections, TRS users often do not receive equal treatment. The Equal Rights Center, or ERC, investigated the treatment of TRS users in the rental housing market in the Greater District of Columbia metropolitan area between October 2011 and March 2012. The ERC conducted 100 fair housing rental telephone tests to compare the treatment of TRS users with non-TRS users. In these tests, TRS users experienced different and more adverse treatment 45% of the time, including rental agents refusing to converse with a TRS caller, misrepresenting apartment availability, providing different rental terms, incentives, application requirements, or information, and providing less follow-up to TRS callers. For more information, go to www.equalrightscenter.org. In other news, in an estimated 95% of credit card collection cases, the result is a default judgment in favor of the bank or other debt collector. But many lawsuits rely on erroneous documents, faulty records, and boilerplate testimony, a pattern that resembles the robo-signing scandal of 2010, in which banks filed false court documents in foreclosure cases, depriving homeowners of due process that may have saved their homes. Consumer advocates say that in many cases, the suits involve debts that have already been discharged in bankruptcy proceedings or otherwise settled or collected. Where debts remain, the amounts are often inflated by excessive fees. Big money is at stake. borrowers are behind on nearly $21 billion in debt on some 10 million credit cards. In addition, debt collectors who buy bad debts for pennies on the dollar from creditors are trying to squeeze billions of dollars more from delinquent borrowers. A model law developed by the National Consumer Law Center would prohibit banks from suing for old debts or from selling bad debt to third-party collectors without first notifying the debtor and providing detailed records of the amounts owed. In the meantime, going to court may be the consumer's best defense. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is warrant in debt nu. A warrant in debt nu is a civil claim for specific personal property or its value in money filed in the General District Court. Although this court form is called a warrant in debt nu, it is not used in a criminal case. It is used only in a civil case. The court paper must be served on or legally delivered to the person sued, called the defendant. The paper tells the date, time, and place of the court hearing, or the time to set the trial date, the property claimed, and its value, and why it's claimed. The hearing is the defendant's chance to contest the claim for money or property, or to ask for a bill of particulars. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and warrant in debt nu is this week's legal term of the week.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the west end of Henrico County, and we're speaking with Manoli Lupassi, a private attorney, formerly a prosecutor, formerly a Richmond City Council member and vice mayor of the city of Richmond, now a delegate to the House of Delegates in the Virginia General Assembly. And among other things, he is now a criminal defense attorney. Welcome to the show, Manoli.
Marty, thank you.
We're going to be talking today with Manoli about what to do when you get arrested. And even before then, the topic will be what to do when you are stopped by the police. And even before that, I guess the question is, Manoli, when can the police stop you?
Police officers can stop you if you're doing something wrong. So if you've got something hanging from the mirror, if you've got a cracked windshield, if the light on your license plate is not working, if your brake lights aren't working, things of that nature, or if you run through a stop sign, or if you just kind of roll slowly through a stop sign, you don't come to a complete stop. There's 5 million different reasons why a police officer would and could stop you. And police are constantly looking for reasons to pull people over, to come into contact with them, and just make sure that they're not violating any other laws. So this is an opportunity for the police to try to get in touch with you, and so you don't want to give them a reason to do that.
And what if you're just walking down the street? What if you're not driving a vehicle, but you're just on the street? What are the reasons there the police could stop you?
They can't stop you, but they can have a general conversation with you. So someone just like, if I'm walking down the street, say I'm walking right out here in front of Mekong and I'm walking down the sidewalk, you could come up to me and start talking to me, just like any other citizen. And they can do the same thing. They can come up and start talking to you, and you can keep on walking and you don't have to talk to them. But if they were to smell marijuana about your person, the smell of marijuana coming from your person, or if they smelled excessive alcohol, they may, in certain circumstances, detain you. So they have to be able to point to some illegality in order for them to put their hands on you and stop you so that you're not free to go.
And I guess that goes to the question of probable cause. We always hear that a lot on the police dramas. What, in your view, is probable cause?
A reason for them to stop you, they have to have a reasonable, articulable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. And so that's kind of nebulous. It's kind of like You know that thing that the Supreme Court justice said a long time ago about obscenity? I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. It's the same kind of thing, I think, a lot of times with judges. They try to come up with an idea of what is reasonable, articulable suspicion that there's some criminality afoot. And so that's the technical legal definition of when they can stop and detain you. There has to be some reasonable grounds that you're up to something, and it can't just be a mere hunch. That's what the law says. So they can't just kind of be speculating. They've got to be able to point to articulable facts that would warrant the reasonable person to believe that you're doing something wrong in order for them to detain you and stop you.
So if you're stopped, what should someone do? I mean, first of all, should they talk to the police at all at that point, or should they stay silent?
The answer to that is it kind of depends. If you're up to a lot of no good, probably the best thing for you to do is just give them your name, rank, and serial number and nothing else. And then say, I'd like to talk to my lawyer. That's probably, I mean, I think if you talk to any criminal defense attorney or any prosecutor, anybody with any sense that knows the law, they're going to say, you know, you should assert your right to have counsel present during any questioning. If you're not doing anything wrong, then, you know, within reason, I think you can answer some basic questions. You should always give your name and your, you know, date of birth and social security number and where you live and all those things. Those are all kind of innocuous questions. If they're stopping you and they're wanting to talk to you, they probably have a reason for wanting to know all those things, and you can give them those things. I think anything beyond that, you know, I want to talk to my lawyer before I talk to you. If you're up to no good, I think that's just probably the best.
And if you're stopped by the police, do you have a right to walk away, or do the police have to say or do something to essentially keep you from being able to just walk away?
I don't think it's really a good policy if a police officer is speaking to you to just walk away, even though, I mean, I would know those instances where I could do it, but this is my job. I mean, I'm a legally trained technician to know when they can and can't put their hands on me. I think the best advice for the average citizen is to cooperate with the police. You know, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you don't really have anything to hide. The best thing to do is to cooperate, but you got to figure out when it is the best time to shut up. And it's not an easy thing to articulate to you, but I don't think it would be a good policy to just give your finger to the police officer and walk away. It's likely going to be some kind of bad situation that's going to happen as a result of that. So I think you got to use some common sense. I mean,
okay. And what about searches? When can the police search you if they have stopped you?
They can search you if you're under arrest. If they have lawfully placed you under arrest, then they can search your person. They can do a brief pat down if they have some articulable reason to believe that you may be armed and dangerous or committing some crime, or that you might be in some way dangerous to them, then they can do a brief pat down to make sure you're not armed. They can't just come to your house and search your house. They have to have a warrant. So there are different levels of protection that the law provides you. If you're out and about in the streets in your car, you have a lot less protection against search and seizure than when you are in your home. When you're in home, the only way they can search is if you give them permission or if they have a warrant. If you don't give them permission, then they've got to have a warrant to come in. They can't just bust down the door and come in.
And do you think people should give permission when the police ask to search either them or their home?
If you give them permission, you got to understand they're going to rip the walls apart if they're looking for something. And so if you have drugs in your house or you have something illegal in your house, you might think you have the best hiding spot in the world, but if they've asked for your permission, they're going to rip the place to shreds. It'll shock you what they'll do to look for whatever they're looking for. So, you know, if you got nothing to hide and you're not doing anything wrong, you know, if the police came to my front door and said, "Can I search your house, Mr. Lupasi?" I'd say, "Well, why the hell do you want to search my house?" And if they say, "Well, we've been looking for somebody in the neighborhood and we're scared that he may have come here," I'm like, "Come on in and search it till your cows come home. I have nothing to hide and I want you to find a bad person here. But if you think you might have something there that you maybe you had there from 5 years ago or whatever, then your best bet is to just say, you know, look, if you want to search my house, you got to have a warrant."
Now, you mentioned earlier that you can be searched if you are arrested. I mean, are there Is there magic language words that the police have to say so that you know you're under arrest?
The answer is not necessarily. I mean, if they stick the cuffs on you, then they've temporarily detained you. That means you're not free to go. So they can search you if you're not free to go, and there's some thought that you may, you know, be dangerous for some reason. And they can base that upon the time of night, where you're arrested, what you're being arrested for, or what, you know, your suspicions are for and all that. But when they tell you you're under arrest, those magic words are words that you know for a fact you're under arrest. Sometimes it's a little bit of a nebulous area. Sometimes they'll put people in cuffs for temporary detention to protect themselves and then let the people go on a summons, release them on a summons. So just because they stuck the cuffs on you does not necessarily mean you're under arrest, but it's not a good situation. You would prefer to never have that happen to you, I think.
So that gets now to the ultimate question of the day. What should you do when you are arrested?
When you're arrested, I mean, really the best thing to do, typically they say you have the right to remain silent. So if you have a right, then you probably ought to exercise it. The bottom line is, when they start reading you your rights, then there's a threat should probably clue you in that they think you've done a very bad thing. And the chances of you being able to say anything that is going to help you are not good. So the best thing for you to do is to be quiet. It's just like what your grandma probably told you a long time ago. It's better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. So when the man is saying you have a right to remain silent, it's probably best, if it's your right, to exercise it and remain silent. And so, and you have the right to an attorney present during this and all other police questioning. If you have a right, then probably you ought to exercise it. It's a right because it's a good thing. It's good to have rights. If they're giving me this right, I think what I'll do, sir, is I'll exercise it. I'll have my lawyer here. He knows a little bit more about all this stuff than me. And then I'll answer the questions when he's here. That's probably the best thing to do. But, you know, oftentimes you're going to be faced with thinking, well, maybe I can talk myself out of it, or maybe they don't really mean this. And you're going to hear the same thing. Hey, right now is the only time I can help you. You know, this is the only time I can help you. So, you know, if you can talk right now and I can help you, you know, I'll put in a good word for you. But if you don't talk, I can't help you. I understand all that. But best thing to do is just exercise your right. You know, if you've got a perfect defense, it'll ferret itself out in front of a judge later on.
And one urban legend that may actually be true is the right to make a phone call once you're arrested. What are the parameters of that right to make the phone call?
Typically, they'll give you a phone call at some point during your arrest process. And it sometimes can come very late. You can sit there in a lockup for a while, and eventually they'll try to get you to a phone to let you make a phone call so you can let somebody on the outside. But I've had clients that have been detained for a very long period of time before they ever got near a phone. It's not a constitutional right.
And when you do get the right to make that phone call, are the police allowed to listen in, or do you have an absolute right to a private phone call?
Whenever you're on the phone and you're locked up, you've got to assume that whoever's running that phone could be listening in, especially when you're in the, you know, you're in a locked up area. You're in an incarcerated area. And so they're subject to listening in on any of those phone calls. Anybody who's in jail right now, they can and do listen to every phone conversation, and it's recorded. And they tell you that. I mean, I'm not telling you anything that the whole world doesn't know. And I've had clients that knew that, didn't believe it. The recording says you're in an incarcerated facility. We're listening in to everything you say. And they just proceed to say everything about their case and wholly incriminate themselves and, you know, the whole nine yards. And it was all recorded. And the prosecutor played it for me. And then, so you go back to your client and say, you know, you dumb, you made their case. They had a weak case, but now you've made it. So now what are we going to do? And so, you know, just you don't want to talk about the facts and circumstances of your case. I mean, when you call somebody, I'm locked up. Well, did you do it? I don't think that's a good idea for us to be talking about that right now. Can you just get a lawyer down here and try to get my bond changed or whatever?
Well, I guess the final question, and this is maybe a loaded one also, is during a police stop or during an arrest, is it legal to record either by video or audio or both the encounter, either you do it or a nearby friend do it? And if it is legal, what's your advice about that?
That's an interesting question. I've always thought about that. It is technically legal in the state of Virginia. In other states, for instance, in Maryland, if you recall when they did the Linda Tripp thing and all that that went along with Monica Lewinsky, where Linda Tripp got in trouble is she was recording in Maryland. If it hadn't been Virginia, as long as one party to the conversation agrees, and ostensibly you're the party, you're the person who agrees, as long as one party agrees to the recording, then you can record surreptitiously. So, Marty, if you call me on the phone and I'm talking to you, and you might not know it, but I can record you. I can record everything you're saying. Right now, you are recording this, and I agree to it. But that is a legal thing. Now, your encounter with the police officer, you know, how would you go about recording it? I guess you could do it on your phone. I don't know. At some point in time, the officer is going to seize whatever's on your person. And so the phone's going to be somewhere. I don't know that he would know it was being recorded. If it were me and I were a police officer, I wouldn't care if you were recording me. If it were me and I were a police officer, really, to be honest with you, I want them to have it recorded. I want it to all be on video. Really, to be honest with you, I think that ultimately, in the long term, it would be in the best interest of every police officer in the United States of America to have a recording device, and it'd be very easy for them to do, and a camera, and it records everything, and it shows everything, and that would be in everyone's best interest, because it would be in the best interest of the defendant, because if a police officer knows that he's being recorded, then it's going to be on the camera, then he's going to do, most of them, I would say 99% of the officers I've ever come into contact with, they're by the book, and they do a good job. But even if you were one who maybe bends it a little bit, you're going to be not going to be doing that if it's on camera and you've got an audio recording. And so it's good for the defendants, and it's good for the police, because what the worst thing that can happen is someone make a false allegation that you've done something untoward or something wrong, and now you've got a defendant, and you never did anything wrong. You did it completely by the book. And so it would protect everybody involved. That's why I don't understand these jurisdictions that don't have it. I think it's a bad call. I think that it's better for everybody. Then everybody feels like they got their day in court. You got your day in court. I think that that's a good thing. Eventually they'll do it. Eventually they'll do it, because it's in everybody's best interest to do it.
Well, thank you so much. We have been talking with Manoli Lupasi. He is a criminal defense lawyer in the west end of Henrico County, also a former prosecutor, former city council member, former vice mayor of the city of Richmond, and now a delegate to the House of Delegates of the General Assembly. Thank you so much for being on the show, Manoli.
Yes, thank you, Marty.
This week's top three tips are about landlord references. The first tip is that a former landlord may not release information about you unless it is a matter of public record, is a summary of your rent payment record, is a material noncompliance notice that you didn't remedy, is provided in a true emergency, or is requested by law enforcement or by a subpoena. The second tip is that a former landlord may not release any other information about you without your written consent. The third tip is that if a former landlord violates these laws, you can sue your former landlord for money damages. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Virginia law gives tenants 3 opportunities to pay their rent late and stay, but you may be surprised to learn how much has to be paid and by when. Join us next week when private attorney Bill Vivarette talks about non-payment of rent and how that can lead to eviction. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.